Manuel L. Quezon III, a descendant of a president, once sagely said in an op-ed, "In this country, the saying goes that no one ever loses elections. Those who got the most votes become elected officials, and the second, third, or fourth placer thunders and shrills about having been cheated." Today, we'll see just how very true that is. Thanks for joining us. This is Yugto, a podcast where we get mad about Filipino history. My name is Sunny, and this is our season on elections in the Philippines. Since it's episode 2, we're talking about the presidential elections of 1992. The 1992 elections were a momentous election for the Philippines. It was the first proper one since the dictator Ferdinand Marcos was finally removed from office. It was the first time in decades that people felt like they would actually have a say on who could run the country without fear of Marcos's goons kicking down their doors. Naturally, it's disappointing that the legacy of this electoral cycle is more one of mudslinging, black propaganda, and accusations of fraud instead of celebrating this freedom. Let's get into it. It is 1992, and it's almost time to vote for who will be president of the Philippines. Finally! After decades of being forced to choose Marcos, over and over and over. Corazon Aquino, the widow, heroine, and figurehead of the People Power Revolution, has no intentions of running again. Rare and surprising as far as Filipino politicians go, but she never intended to run in the first place after all. It was the assassination of her husband that propelled her to the fore. It's time for her to pass the buck back to someone else, someone more experienced, who wants it more. And boy, do plenty of people line up to be someone else. Again, this is the first election in a long time where no one has to lick Marcos's boots to run. Of course a flurry of hands shoot up saying, "Me, me, me, I've been waiting so long. It's my time to be president." Seven names emerge as candidates. Former Secretary to the Military, Fidel Ramos, emerges as an early frontrunner, alongside House Speaker Ramon Mitra and billionaire business tycoon Eduardo Cojuangco Jr. Ramos has Aquino's endorsement. Mitra is favored by a lot of the established politicians. Cojuangco has the strongest level of celebrity among the candidates and is every inch the image of financial success. These three old men are the early winning picks. And out of the three, only one of them does not have a reputation for having entrenched alliances with political families of different levels of shady. Fidel Ramos becomes the masses' favorite. And in a country as densely populated and as mired in poverty as the Philippines, it's the masses' vote that you need to win. There are other names. Former Senate President Jovito Salonga and Vice President Salvador Laurel suffer the same problems as Mitra and Cojuangco. Too boring and too much the image of a traditional politician. Imelda Marcos, the wife of the disgraced dictator Ferdinand Marcos, has the gall, the delusion to poke her fraudulent face in the picture. She too will not pull the numbers outside of her fanatical home region, for obvious reasons. Then, there is a last name. The seventh person running for president. Like Fidel Ramos, she lacks political machinery behind her. But she has a certain flair. She's quickly established herself as outspoken, unafraid, some would even say rude. At the start of the campaign season, she's just another name on the bench. By the end of it, she will be the future president's nemesis. Her name is Miriam Defensor Santiago. Fidel Ramos has a problem, and it's shaped like a stocky woman with stiff hair and a perpetually aggressive pose. The problem's name is Miriam Defensor Santiago. Ramos and his team thought it would be a bit of a cakewalk to win the presidency, especially after actor and politician Erap Estrada dropped out to be Cojuangco's vice president. Erap will have that position in the bag, so whatever. That's not what matters right now. What matters is Ramos is trailing behind in the public polls to Santiago. Ramos is well-meaning enough, he isn't self-destructing or coming across as fake as Mitra and Cojuangco. His attachment to dictator Marcos has been forgotten and forgiven by the people, unlike several of his peers. However, he's also not necessarily the type that's made for TV. He's pretty withdrawn, thoughtful, he thinks before he talks, and he hums and ahs along with the best of them. Santiago is the opposite of him, and every day more and more people take notice. Every time she speaks, her volume's close to yelling, and every day she has new soundbites against the other six candidates. In her words, a band of idiots. Santiago has it out for Ramos specifically. On one occasion, Santiago literally calls him fungus face in front of the media for all to hear. Another day, she proclaims decisively that all her opponents are certifiable idiots. And to Ramos, she directly and publicly challenges, "Let's bring it down to numbers. Let's both take an IQ test and let people see who's really smarter between the two of us." On yet another day, Santiago comes out swinging, almost literally. She's gone from name-calling to a mental battle to now a physical one. Ramos, she challenges, should meet me in a fistfight. I'm not afraid of him. In fact, she says she's ready to deck him. And Ramos, he has to wring his hands and say no. He's not going to reduce his presidential election to a few blows in a boxing ring. Even if he is very sorely tempted now. Santiago is an itch that won't go away. Even if what she does is loud and problematic and reduces rhetoric to a few finger points and colorful insults, the masses are having the time of their lives with her. They love her. Someone who doesn't seem to be cut from the same cloth as the political families that stayed quiet during martial law, and someone whose quotable quotes turn the evening news into some kind of dramedy. She is unforgettable. And she has grown to be a force to be reckoned with. So what is someone like Ramos to do, aside from meeting her verbal jab to verbal jab in the exhausting everyday? Maybe make use of the 5 million pesos he sourced during the start of campaign season from Muammar Gaddafi, the dictator of Libya. Something admittedly random and insidious that does not become public until over 20 years after the fact. Maybe he should plant some seeds about Santiago being unstable or mentally unsound. There's still a few months to the election after all, and if you're willing to get your hands dirty, there are plenty of options. Miriam Defensor Santiago has a problem. It's shaped like an old, wiry military man with big glasses that may or may not even have lenses, and a dour expression. The problem's name is Fidel Ramos. Or at least she suspects it is. She believes he might have the biggest cause out of all of her rivals to be spreading the lies and insults that have been popping up on the news lately. After all, at this point she's overtaken him so that he's the one playing second fiddle to her in the public polls. What lies and insults? Why, there have been several. The other camps and tabloids have taken to frequently calling her Brenda. It seems harmless, until Santiago finds out that it's short for brain damaged. Brenda? Brain damage? How quaint. She's also apparently being called Rita, short for retarded. At this point, one white paper had been widely circulated, dissecting the way Santiago speaks, asking why she sometimes has a tendency to talk like a robot. That same paper said that insanity runs in her family, and that she is, end quote, despotic, dictatorial, and a nut. Ramos himself has been saying to the press that he represents stability, whereas Santiago, with her outbursts and her insults, represents unpredictability. He implies that she isn't all there and that she has some kind of mental illness. Santiago's been giving as good as she has been getting, of course. She's not crazy, she declares over and over, and if Fungus Face wants to talk about how bad she is under stress, then she can declare just as pointedly that he's really just a male version of Corazon Aquino. Quote, ineffectual and someone who habitually waffles under stress. The rumors about Santiago continue to snowball, though. And this is an age intensely unkind towards those with mental illness. So much so that the Commissions for Elections Commissioner herself ends up asking all presidential and vice presidential aspirants to disclose their mental and physical health records. The commissioner delicately says that the increasing accusations being thrown across camps is making the commission themselves question if they are true or not. Candidates who are not in full control of their minds or those who are insane should not be elected into office, for obvious reasons, she says. In borderline cases, what is important is full disclosure by the candidates so that the electorate can make its own judgments. The ask is directed at all candidates, but it isn't hard to see that this is an extra step in the campaign to denigrate Santiago. Everyone whispers, oh my god, she's so crazy, she actually has to get tested now. Brenda, Rita, volatile, over-emotional, unstable, robot-like, unlikable, crazy. They say it all. But Santiago continues to have the numbers. Referring to Ramos, she at one point declares in a public event, if that stupid man wins, he's not only a fool, but he's a thief. If he wins through fraudulent tactics, I challenge him to a fistfight in Iloilo's public square. This declaration was met with shrieks of approval from hundreds of supporters. The mudslinging and the trading insults continue just as strong. In the midst of this, 21 people die in election violence all around the Philippines. Reports say that there are payoffs as high as $4,000 a month, or upwards of 415,000 pesos, from candidates in the powers that be. It seems that the democratic process in the post-martial law era of the Philippines isn't as clear or as peaceful as some people thought it would be, neither in word nor in deed. It is May 1992. Finally, after months of mudslinging and the real issues facing the Filipino people taking a backseat to finger-pointing and name-calling, it is the election. People from all across the archipelago flock to the polls to decide who the next president of the Philippines is going to be. The pre-election polls are in, and it's only going to be one of two people. Ramos or Santiago? Grab the popcorn, because it's going to be one hell of a show. Over the course of the day, Filipinos that have been too scared to vote or have had their votes manipulated by Marcos cronies cast honest ballots for the first time in decades. They feel the weight of it, the importance of it. They are eager to participate, even if it means shading in on paper ballots which are a foot and a half long, since so many people are running for so many things. The votes are cast and the counting begins. It's painfully slow. Computers aren't yet what they are today. People are still reliant on fax machines and even hand counting. The developments come in trickles and the nation watches impatiently. Edup Estrada handily takes a massive lead with the vice presidency. Meanwhile, the other five presidential candidates begin to concede one by one. The nation waits with bated breath as Ramos and Santiago match each other vote for vote. As the camps of both candidates watch, there's a break in the count. Santiago takes a lead over Ramos. At first, it's by a few hundreds. Then that lead slowly becomes more tangible. Her votes climb several rungs above him, then stay steady there. Both their numbers continue to increase, but the lead doesn't narrow between the two. Santiago's camp begins to exhale, they dare to smile, and Ramos's camp stops breathing. Suddenly, a blackout. The This is nothing new in the Philippines in these times. Aquino was a president full of heart, but she didn't do too well in many other areas, including the infrastructure and economy needed to keep the lights on. Blackouts had become a hallmark of her presidency. That it happens now is just an inconvenient coincidence, something that slows an already slow count. But when the lights come back on, the nation can hardly believe its eyes. In the space of that one blackout, Ramos's count has been able to flip the numbers around somehow. After that quick break in the darkness, somehow, some way, he is now in the lead against Santiago. And his lead continues to climb for the rest of the count. It takes a few days, but when all is said and done, Ramos has 23.58% of the vote. Santiago has 19.72%. It's the lowest plurality in Filipino history, and still is. Less than one in every four people wanted Ramos in the presidential palace. Nevertheless, it's enough. Ramos has become the next president of the Philippines. It is still May 1992, and Santiago has lost. This loss, as far as she's concerned, is unacceptable. Really? Ramos somehow overtook her during a blackout? As if. Santiago has a plethora of words for what might have gone on in the dark. The absolute lie. A rape of the democratic process. Wholesale electoral fraud. She declares to the news that she is going to, quote, personally lead a series of mass demonstrations to thwart a deliberate, well-orchestrated nationwide scenario to cheat the Filipino people of the rightful results of their elections. That'll take time, though. In the immediate aftermath, she's going on a hunger strike. A fast until death, she calls it. She's also calling as many people as she can, including then-American President George Bush, to join her in a statement denouncing the elections. Ramos reads this in the newspapers. He sees it on TV. And what does he do? He shrugs. He's president now. How or why isn't the issue anymore? He's already thinking of projects. He's already thinking about who's in whose pockets. He has better things to worry about than the ravings of a sore loser. Eventually, Archbishop Cardinal Sin talks Santiago down from her fasting. Eventually, the country settles quite gamely into a Ramos presidency. Santiago will keep contesting the election results in court until her motion is thrown out when she wins the Senate seat. Till her death in 2018, she will claim that she was cheated and that she could have called for a revolution as big as people power if she had so chosen. Through all this, she will continue to call Ramos he who must not be named, and Ramos would continue to roll his eyes at her at every opportunity. Did Ramos cheat? There was certainly an undeniable space for manipulation during those hours where the lights blinked off. There were known cases of the remnants of Marcos's guns, goons, and gold strategy, resulting in local elections fraud from all around the country at the time. And Ramos did receive that foreign funding from Gaddafi, which he never disclosed. As with most things in the annals of Filipino history, the truth is, we'll never know for sure. This would be far from the last time we would see a heavily contested election. We'll have a great example about the infamous 2004 elections next episode. But for now, let's look at a more recent and relevant fit. How Bongbong Marcos never yielded to the idea that he was frauded out of the vice presidency by the camp of Lenny Robredo. When Bongbong Marcos lost the vice presidency, who was the presidential candidate who lost alongside him? Who enabled him and set the foundation for his road to the presidency that even now winds and winds forward in a wave of anti-historicity and blatant colluding with other oligarchs? None other than the Iron Lady herself, Miriam Defensor Santiago. Suffice it to say that many who once looked up to her, including myself, who knew her to have been wrongly treated for her outspokenness, or who thought her to have been cheated in those 1992 elections, were gravely disappointed. Heaven knows why Santiago, once a staunch activist during the martial law era, backpedaled so hard that she literally spent the last few months of her life enabling the son of a dictator she used to rail against. This is especially when Santiago did not stand a chance in the 2016 elections. Not that she was not popular anymore, she remained highly admired throughout her political career post-1992. She remained a staunch anti-corruption defender and a mainstay in the media for her spicy comebacks against the establishment. She was still often quoted in the news and online for her no-nonsense attitude. That same thing that was used against her in 1992 gave her followers and fans among the masses. But in that election of 2016, let's all admit that she was just a tool for Bongbong Marcos to stage his little comeback. While she was left in the dust with a tainted legacy, Bongbong Marcos came in second to Leni Robredo. And again to this day, reminiscent of Santiago herself, he contests that win and claims he was cheated of victory, even as an official recount only gave Leni Robredo more of the votes. Santiago has since passed. It is a shame that her multi-layered legacy of staying yourself despite black propaganda and fighting for the truth was sullied right at the end of her long life. We stand now at the cusp of another election. Marcos Jr. intends to gain vengeance in the upcoming elections, where he outpolls Leni Robredo by about 40% as of time of writing, depending on which polls you're paying attention to. This is a history podcast, so of course I am hoping to every entity available that this will not be the case, or that he at least acknowledges and expresses proper remorse regarding his family's legacy. Either way, stay tuned to the news for the inevitable contestations after all of this is said and done. Thanks for listening. Yugto is narrated, researched, and written by Sunny, and is supported by the Work in Progress team. Sources and any subsequent correction of facts for this episode can be found on our website. For more information about the horrors of martial law, listen to Yugto Season 1, The Murders of Martial Law. For more on how the Marcos campaign uses the digital space to spread anti-historical propaganda, follow me at sunny_bunny_tan on TikTok. Support us on Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube, or email us for any questions at whipinc.ph@gmail.com. Never forget, never again, vote wisely, and see you soon.